This is another edition of the Lunch Special on KZSU Stanford. Welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU Stanford. And today, honored to be joined by Stanford physics professor, Professor Douglas Osheroff. Welcome to KZSU, Professor.
I'm glad to be here.
And have you been on KZSU before?
I don't think so. I usually cause so much grief to myself that I would remember.
Well, welcome. What was that song we just heard?
Well, that's actually part of Jean Sibelius's Finlandia, which is a really interesting piece of music. I think it sort of describes vocally and with music the struggles that the small country Finland has gone through. And this is basically a piece of that. There's a hymn without words, and I think once the piece was published, people started putting words to it, and that's the first one that is in Finnish. I can't understand it.
You brought up an entire hour's worth of music for us today, and is there a theme to the music you brought?
Well, no, these are just pieces that I like. That's what I was sort of told to bring, and so I have rather eclectic taste in music.
Uh-huh. And you've been here at Stanford for a while, but you have a very colorful, you've led a very colorful life, and you're still doing it, and you are a Nobel Peace Prize winner, Nobel laureate. And we're going to get into all that near the bottom of the hour. We want to really delve into this music you brought. What do you have queued up next for the listening audience?
I have no idea, you guys.
Okay. Why don't we play it? We'll find out.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place. Country roads. All my men memories gather round her. Miner's lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky. Misty taste of moonshine, teardrop in my eye. Country roads, take me home to the place.
welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special. In case you just tuned in, to date, Nobel Prize winner, not Nobel Peace Prize, Nobel Prize winner for physics and Stanford professor, physics professor in applied physics, Douglas D. Osheroff is our guest. And Professor Osheroff, could talk about that that last piece we played. That was a he had some special stuff to say about that.
Yeah, well, my wife and I, when we were in New Jersey, we had season tickets to the Metropolitan Opera, and it was just an amazing thing. This is from Puccini's last opera, Turandot, and it's a complicated plot, as most of these operas are, but my wife is Chinese, and so, in fact, that the this takes place in China. Supposedly, it's an opera. Of course.
Oh, so this is something you listen to around the house?
Mostly in bed on my iPod.
And before that, we played John Denver. Are you just a fan of John Denver's music? Was there a particular reason that you wanted to play John Denver?
Well, I like the song and "Take Me Home, Country Roads." I think a lot of people. I think that resonates with them. They'd like to go home. I have a brother that thinks you can never go home.
Really?
Both of my parents are dead.
Now you were born in Aberdeen, Washington.
That's correct.
Was that a small town?
Yeah, I think it's smaller now than it was then.
Yeah, a lot of towns are like that, like Detroit. But you were raised in a small town in America.
Absolutely.
So maybe that's why that song appeals to you.
Yeah, maybe.
And do you think you can go back home?
Well,
opposite of your brother?
Or? Yeah. I don't have any family in Aberdeen, Washington anymore. Occasionally, I do go up and I give talks at the local high school.
Really?
One time I did this, kids would just ask questions. I was hosted by a chemistry teacher. And so, this went from 9 o'clock or whenever. And so then the bells rang and those kids didn't move. The next class came in. And they just kept going until noon. And by that time, of course, the classroom was completely jam-packed.
Wow.
But it was just a hell of a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
That must have been really rewarding for you. You've been at Stanford quite a while, but again, I don't want to get into these statistics until the bottom of the hour. What do we have up next? It would be the song after the Puccini.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is quite an eclectic mix. This has got a real beat to it. Peggy Sue.
By Buddy Holly?
By Buddy Holly, yes.
Some music you grew up with, huh?
You bet.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, Kelly. Peggy Sue, oh how my heart yearns for you, oh Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh well, I love you, girl, yes, I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue, pretty, 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 pretty Peggy Sue. Oh. And I need you, Peggy Sue. I love you, Peggy Sue, with a love so rare and true. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Well, I love you, gal, I want you, Peggy Sue. I need you, Peggy Sue. I love you, Peggy Sue.
the love so rare and true. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Well, I love you, gal, and I want you, Peggy Sue. Well, I love you, gal, and I want you, Peggy Sue.
Called Unchained Melody, and when it hit the charts, that was the Righteous Brothers. And these songs are all being picked by my guest today, Douglas D. Osheroff, professor of physics and applied physics here at Stanford, and also a recipient of the 1996 Nobel Prize in Physics. And Professor Osheroff, beautiful stuff. It's kind of it must get you reminiscing, huh?
Because you
remember these songs when they came out, brand new, right?
Yeah. At least most of them.
So you've been telling us off mic of from a young age you were involved in science, and instead of going to play sports after school, you go down in the basement and you were generating voltage and blowing stuff up. And how did music fit into your life back then?
Well, I that was back when every rock was really the key, and so
he's telling me to put the headphones on. I don't know why I have to hear myself. Oh, so this I can tell.
So you can hear me too.
Yeah, right. Okay, so.
Yeah, so you can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a physics thing, you know.
Right.
With the,
okay.
Anyway, how did music fit into that, and where did it fit in? Because, I mean, it sounds like you were just deeply enmeshed in science and learning all about it. You said you loved it, right?
It was certainly my favorite thing to do, but they had these dances at the YMCA every I think it was Friday nights. And
would you go?
Oh yeah, for sure. Everyone did.
You'd come out of the basement and go to the dance.
Well, yeah, you know, kind of. All my friends were there. And
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Now were you what we would think of as, you know, the nerdy guy?
I don't know if.
Did you dance?
I did dance. I mean, it was, you know, kind of. I don't know if I was very good at it.
Yeah, but. Well, who was back then?
Right.
It must have been a great time, because we're talking about the late 50s, the early 60s.
Yeah.
And life was definitely different than it is now, wasn't it?
Oh, you bet.
And you were now Aberdeen, Washington. What part of the state is that in? Is it near Seattle?
Yeah, no. It's tip of Grace Harbor. Just basically, if you go from the bottom of Puget Sound and go west, you go right through Aberdeen.
Oh, so you're right on the water.
Pretty close, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the inner tip of Grace Harbor, not on the ocean.
So kind of a lot of fishing going on there and stuff?
A lot of fishing, but I must say, when I was young, it was a logging town. I mean, my parents had a house that was kind of up above the town, and it, at night, you know, there's no air conditioning or anything like that, so if it was warm, my brother, older brother and I would hang our pillows out the window to cool them off, and we'd just look out, and you'd see, you know, probably a dozen sawmills with these wigwam burners that burn the slag. Now, of course, they convert that into all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you get a chance to get up there much anymore?
Well, there's no one left. My family's all gone from there, and so occasionally a teacher from the high school will invite me up, and it's kind of really fun.
Yeah, that part's great. Yeah. And that's the high school you went to?
Yeah, it's a Weatherwax High School.
That's got to be great. It's great that it's still there too.
Well, yeah. Well, I think the main building burned down, but it's still in the same spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's close enough to the bottom of the hour. Let's get into a little bit of this here. Douglas D. Osheroff, you're a professor here of physics and applied physics here at Stanford. You've been here since '87. You were born in Aberdeen, Washington. You got a B.S. at Caltech in Pasadena in 1967. You got your PhD in 72-73. There's kind of a little story. At Cornell, in physics, you became a member of the technical staff at AT&T Bell Laboratories. That's out in New Jersey, right?
Right.
And that must have been some groundbreaking work you were in on, huh? Because the technology was kind of changing at that point?
Yeah, well, I was in the physics part division, we were allowed to do anything we wanted, and we got phenomenal support. Occasionally, a director would call me in his office and say, "Osheroff, why aren't you spending more money?" National Science Foundation never did that to me.
Wow! So they were you were employed by them to help further the whole studies and get AT&T Bell. That's when the two companies were all. Well, they got broken up later, but
yeah.
What were you doing there? What were you doing at the AT&T Bell Laboratories?
You know, I'd come there just after doing the work that ultimately won the Nobel Prize. So I was studying the properties of superfluid helium-3 at temperatures within a couple thousandths of a degree of absolute zero.
And how did that help AT&T Bell?
It didn't.
Really?
It didn't. But I mean, look, it's basic research. And what's true is that superfluid helium-3 was the first example of the kind of order that you find in superconductors. But it was unconventional superconductor. In this case, superfluid, because helium-3 atoms are neutral. They don't carry charge.
Mm-hmm. Did that research help Bell at all with any of their stuff, business-wise?
Well, so what happened is, I went on to study the properties, low-temperature properties of amorphous solids, glassy materials, and things like that. And you know, we were always getting patents for stuff. And then what happened is we hoped, of course, that I think that AT&T hoped that those patents would be wanted by someone, and then they'd do these patent swaps and stuff like
okay.
that.
Okay. So there was a real business side to it. Yeah. It just didn't necessarily affect their direct business. You were also head of solid-state and low-temperature research, the research department, and that was at AT&T Bell Labs?
Right, yeah.
That was from 81 to 87. Professor of physics and applied physics from 87 to now here at Stanford, the J.G. Jackson and C.J. Wood Professor of Physics. I guess that's a kind of a fellowship.
Yeah, well, it's a chair is what they call it. But but it's interesting because those guys were lumber magnates.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean J.G. Jackson and C.J. Wood?
Right, right. And it couldn't have been more appropriate that I should get their chair, I suppose, since my first job was in the sawmill.
How did that work that you got the chair from them?
I didn't get it from there. I think they were dead by the time I got it.
But they call you and they say, we're giving you this chair?
Well, so the chair goes to Stanford University, and then Stanford University gives it to whatever professor they feel deserves it or whatever.
Yeah. Did they know what your first job was, working in a sawmill?
I doubt it.
That's funny. That's ironic. You're a fellow of the American Physical Society and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And I guess that's not just here at Stanford, but that's probably worldwide, right?
Well, those are both national organizations.
Uh-huh. You're a member of the National Academy of Sciences, the Simon Memorial Prize. You won the Simon Memorial Prize in 1976. What was that all about?
It's a prize given in solid state or condensed matter physics. It was actually the first, I guess, reasonably prestigious prize that I ever got.
Hmm. And then in 81, you won the Oliver E. Buckley Prize. What was that?
Well, that's a prize given by the American Physical Society, and that's actually in my field of condensed matter physics or solid state physics. That is quite a prestigious prize.
Were these prizes that kind of led up to your Nobel Prize?
Well,
same kind of
Lord,
work.
One doesn't know.
sure. No, but looking back, though,
looking at back, I'd gotten a number of these prizes before I got the Nobel Prize for sure.
You got the Walter J. Gores Award for Teaching in 1991.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're actually a co-recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physics for 1996 and a Gerhard Casper University Fellow in Undergraduate Education. Professor Douglas Osheroff is our guest today, professor in physics and applied physics. Off mic, though, you mentioned that you're teaching photography now.
Yeah, well, this course started as a sophomore seminar called The Physics of Photography, and I would talk about how lenses worked and all, film and all of this stuff. And then the university decided they wanted us to teach freshman seminars so that the freshmen wouldn't go home and say that I hadn't gotten closer than 20 rows from a faculty member. And so that's why we have these freshman seminars. And so I just ported this course and made it a freshman course. And it's the way I think about it is it's sharing one of my passions, which is photography, with my students. And so a lot of these kids are just really good.
So you're a shutterbug.
Yeah, I guess you can say that. So this weekend, I drove a group down to do Big Sur. It's 200 miles, and then we went. Another group went up to the Golden Gate Bridge.
And wow!
So the idea is, you know, the course owns a bunch of cameras. Well, Stanford University owns these cameras, and we let the students borrow them. These are digital SLRs, full frame. Pretty good cameras.
Do you still mess with film at all, or are you just strictly digital?
Well, I haven't done anything other than digital for quite a long time. I mean, the point is that almost everything you want to print, you want to change a little bit, either increase the contrast or bring up highlights, or cut down on the highlights and bring up the shadows and stuff like that. Anything that I'm going to want to do, I want to manipulate a little bit. It's just a lot easier if you start digital to begin with.
Do you mess around with Photoshop?
Oh, well, I don't mess around with Photoshop. That's one of my tools.
Douglas D. Osheroff is our guest for the hour. Also, while we're talking here, before I forget to ask about it, your connection with the environment. You're would you consider yourself an environmentalist?
Well, I mean, I'm not someone who goes and on marches and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel it's a serious issue, and as a Nobel laureate, I can say things which will make it into the press and things like that. And I think, you know, that if you look at what's happening, I think global warming, it's clearly happening, but uh-huh. but it's a lot more than that. I mean,
are we witnessing global climate change?
Yeah, I think we are.
After last Friday in Alabama, they'd say yeah, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, you can't take a little thing like that. It's like,
no, that was 160 tornadoes in one day. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
Thing, well, that is amazing.
Wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but I don't know. If you compare that with the huge ninth magnitude earthquake in Japan, I mean,
speak about that a little bit. Talk about physics. What did that do to you guys? Did that astound you guys?
Well, it's sort of interesting. The earthquake itself, I don't think, killed very many people. It was the tsunami afterward.
Yeah,
that was really, yeah. And it's interesting, the kind of earthquakes we get in California are more or less horizontal. So a plate is moving north with respect to another plate. What made this such a horrific event was, in fact, that you had an uplift of the sea bottom.
Oh, really? That's what happened?
And that then created this enormous tsunami.
Oh, and this is why we don't get the tsunamis out here, because we don't get that kind of uplift?
Right.
Okay. And another amazing thing about the Japanese event was we got to see a lot of it on film. Actually, that day, remember?
Oh, yeah.
I woke up to it, and it was crazy.
That cell phones are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, to watch that stuff. You know, the people were up on a hill or something, and to watch that stuff wash in, and it was just carrying all the debris with it.
Oh, my God,
Oh, man, it was just terrible. And what, how many people did they lose? Thousands, right?
23,000, I think,
yeah,
something
still
like that.
Gone. Yeah. But the wildest story I heard was the guy they found out at sea, over 100 miles, a U.S. Navy ship found him standing on his house. It got swept out, and he stayed on it, and he survived.
Well, he was one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, definitely. Also,
yeah, just let me say, I don't want to belittle this terrible set of tornadoes that struck this southeast. Yeah, it's really horrible.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. No, nobody got that impression. I didn't. You were on the investigative board after the Columbia space shuttle disaster in 2003.
Yeah.
So that means they called you up and they said, we want you to be one of the investigators to figure out what went wrong.
Yeah, more or less that's exactly what happened.
Speak about that experience. That must have been interesting, huh?
Well, it's interesting. I was department chair in the physics department at that time, and I was a pretty busy person. And I went home, and they'd asked me if I would be interested. And so I went home and told my wife that I'd gotten this phone call. And she pointed her finger at me and says, don't you do that. Don't you do that. Because she figured that was just going to be too much.
Really?
But it was one of the most fascinating things I ever done in my life.
Now, since she was so much vehemently against it, did that kind of push you one way or the other, or were you kind of...
No, I jumped right into it? I just thought it was just going to be too interesting a thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How long does a thing like that last? You're on the board. That means you got to go to meetings. Yeah. Did you have to spend a lot of time there? Did you have to suspend your teaching?
I can't remember what happened to my teaching, but I was spending half time at Stanford and half time in various places. I mean, we were meeting in a lot of different NASA facilities. There was a big meeting we had in Washington, D.C. There's actually a guy that sort of... I won't give you his name. I don't know how far this is going to go out, but he is, I guess you'd call him a NASA groupie, but he's a very serious guy.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and he actually drove down from Pittsburgh on his Harley Davidson to meet me. That was really amazing.
Down to where?
Washington, D.C. They were having a meeting there. Yeah,
That was a big deal. I remember it. We were actually going to spread a friend of mine's ashes who had passed away at the beach the morning that that happened. Mm. And out the door, we saw this. Yeah. We saw the video of it on CNN. Yeah. And they had to go around and try to collect all those pieces. And it stretched from Florida to Texas, right?
Yeah.
The
yeah.
debris. And
mostly Texas and west.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did they put all that stuff in one place and have you guys look at it?
Yeah, yeah. There was an empty airplane hangar down
Area 51.
No. Anyway, so everything that was found was brought to this empty airplane hangar, and they identified. It was amazing they could identify all these parts because it was just, and then they would lay it on the floor as if the shuttle were laying their belly up.
Okay,
and so you could see, and it's just really interesting to look. I mean, it didn't take us very long to understand the physical causes of the accident. Mm-hmm. But there was actually a piece of equipment that was found called the modular MADS recorder, modular auxiliary data recorder.
Uh-huh.
And this thing had all sorts of information about what had happened, and temperatures as off normal temperatures and strains and stuff like that. And once we had that, it was sort of interesting. The first time that they walked the flight path on the ground, looking for stuff, they missed that. But then they caught it the second time, and this thing was in perfect shape. I mean, it's amazing that something could survive such a horrific accident, then fall out of the sky and be in perfect shape.
Well, and when we heard the description of what actually happened, so the hull was broken. The hull got cracked from that piece of ice that hit it, and so they basically burned up on reentry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like what we've all been told, you know, you got to have that heat shield or you will burn up on reentry. So the fire, you know, the friction got in and just fried them alive, right?
Well, so what happened was they were actually still alive up to the point where the left wing, that's where all the heat was generated. Basically, the left wing fell apart, and then the whole thing started spinning and very quickly
disintegrated.
But the astronauts were still in a pressurized container envelope, but that then was going 12,000 miles an hour when at that point, and so the friction with the air caused the aluminum to melt.
Man.
And then we actually saw the seats that the astronauts had been in. There were splattered aluminum all over the place.
Really? The seats were actually still kind of there?
Yeah.
They didn't, like, disintegrate?
No.
Wow. That's amazing. Douglas Oshkosh, professor of physics here at Stanford and the 1996 co-recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physics. Just so happy to have you here, Professor Oshkosh. Let's get on with some more music, and we have Creedence Clearwater and Bad Moon Rising. What's the deal with
that? Well, this is my bad boy song.
Well, everybody's got to have one, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's check it out now.
Take where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. O island in the sun, will to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sun. As morning breaks the heaven on high, I lift my heavy load to the sky. Sun comes down with a burning glow, mingles my sweat with the earth below. O island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sun. I see woman on bended knee, cutting cane for her family. I see man at the water's side, casting nets at the surging tide. O island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sun. I hope the day will never come that I can't awake to the sound of drum. Never let me miss carnival with calypso songs philosophical. O island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sun.
Maggie. I'll be here. find the place where I am lying, then kneel and say an Ave there for me. And I shall hear the soft tread above me, and on my grave will Oma sweeter be.
Thank our guest, Professor Douglas D. Osheroff, for coming in today. Professor Osheroff, thank you so much for all this great music. You can see this, you can see the song list online at KZSU, at the KZSU website with Zookeeper, and you can hear this show again at Radio for All starting tomorrow. It'll be up there on Radio, the number for All. It'll be for a podcast, or you can take it down and re-air it on any radio station you want to. Douglas Osheroff, in departing here, any last parting shots you'd like to give the folks?
Gee, I don't know. I mean, I've had such a wonderful life. I've enjoyed, certainly, my 24 years here at Stanford University.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the Nobel Prize has really made an awful lot of difference, but I think, you know, all I can say to the young people that are listening to this, maybe only old people are, but just never say never. And just if you get opportunities in life, go for them. It just makes life a lot more interesting.
Great words spoken by a great man. Thank you, Professor Osheroff. And please come back soon, okay?
It's a deal.
Thank you.
Hello? Yes? Am I speaking to Douglas Osheroff? Yes, it's 2:30 in the morning. I know it is, but I have a very urgent message for you.
Yes?
If you can take that. I am Carl Olof Jakobsson, the Secretary General of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. And I would like to congratulate you, because the Academy just decided that you, together with David Lee and Robert Richardson, have been awarded the 1996 Nobel Prize in Physics.
My goodness.
For your discovery of superfluidity in helium-3.
My goodness.
Hello?
I'm here.
You here?
I'm here.
Okay, and you are stunned, I guess.
Should I write something?
To extend the congratulations of the Academy. And I already spoke to David Lee. And and I'm going to...